Mac Robinson on the board. We got Jake Murren behind the glass. Meredith Kane on the 2020s there. And across from me, the always lovely Danny Cunningham of Cleveland Magazine, 92.3thefan.com. Got himself a podcast. The man is Cleveland Seacrest, and I say that pretty much about everybody with multiple jobs.
Yeah, just missing the hair.
Yeah.
That's all I'm missing.
Yeah, I don't think it's real.
Probably not, but yeah. I mean, it's mine LA. Is, and it's not that.
It's L.A. I mean, at some point, I think whether you need them or not, at 35, they're just like, we're just going to give you plugs.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I think that's very common out there.
Also, I think Ryan has started to have plastic surgery.
Started?
Yeah. Well, within the last decade. Everything. If it's happened in the last decade, it's started.
Okay.
That's how time is for me now, because I think I just stopped being of a time about a decade ago. So now everything's like, if it happened in the last 10 years, it happened 3 weeks ago.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And if it happened 2 weeks ago, it happened 5 years ago.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
It's a convoluted math.
Yeah, time really works well for you. You're good at calendars.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't think I'm really good at anything.
No, you're not.
I think the most freeing thing about age is you just realize you're really kind of a moron. And there's a reason why you are where you are. And why you'll never go where you want to go. And that's okay.
I feel that every day.
Acceptance is a gift and a cage, depending on how you look at it. But no, I'm going to need you to do something for me, though, Danny. I need you. You're a friend.
Yes.
All right?
Yes. What's
like,
up?
You're one of the people that when I was in Charlotte, I always made sure to text you, how you doing? When you were in Minnesota, how you doing? Because you are a true good guy. And I mean
thank you. You are as well, Nick.
You are a dear heart, and I mean that. You're one of my favorite people in the media, and I'm mostly saying this because you're sitting across from me.
Right, you would not say this if I was at home.
I could be saying the same thing to anybody. Like, it could be, you know, Stalin could be sitting across me, and I'm buttering.
Let's not get carried away.
I'm saying, like, this is how I butter people up.
I think that might go a little too far.
No, okay. So he was a bad guy, okay? That's 2024, guys. Bleep your feelings. Now, with that being said, I'm going to put a pin in that one for later.
Good idea.
I need you to talk me off the ledge with the Cavs.
Why do you need to be talked off the ledge? Like, are you not all in on this team? What needs to be talked off the ledge here?
No.
I need a little bit of background on how you're feeling before I can go into this.
No, I'm as all in as I can get.
Okay.
We're pushing it to the limit here.
So you want me to be negative about the team that has been the best team in basketball, has the best offense in the league, is the leading the league in three-point shooting percentage and just genuinely looks awesome?
No, I'm losing objectivity. And I promise you it's not because they beat LeBron last night. Not entirely. It's because in five games, it has been so much fun. The offense looks great. Everybody's getting in on the action. Like, I see the path forward so crystal clear. Like, even if they have health issues, I expect them to still play really well, because the style of play keeps everyone involved and everybody happy. They're like 11 deep of playable guys, and they might even be 12 deep, quite frankly, if you want to develop a young guy or two.
Right.
And I watch these guys every night, and it's like I'm falling in love. Well, it's like I remember this feeling from 20 years ago. I remember what this is like. Because I've been in love for 20 years, okay? Easy there. My point is,
I thought you were talking about LeBron.
It's the first time I fell in love with him, too. He's just got just a beautiful human being. I love that title a lot, all right? It's subsided me for almost a full decade, along with a lot of calories and sugar. But, no, I keep trying, like, I am losing objectivity on this team because it's so fun, and it does look every bit like what I want it to look like all of last year, and even parts of the year before that. And so when you see it, it's like, yes, this is what the Cavs can be. And I find it hard to not then be like, I mean, why couldn't you go to the finals?
Right. And
like, it's five games, though.
I think the answer to that at this point is just the Boston Celtics. Like, that is the only good answer I can say as to why can't this Cavs team go to the finals. Like, I just look at the East and I say, the Boston Celtics. That's it. And the best thing about this team so far, and they have been awesome through five games, but this five games, I think, has looked unlike any five-game stretch I can remember in Cavaliers basketball, because they have had what feels like a different player be their best player every night, and they've been successful. You can have a different player be your best player every night, lose games, and it doesn't matter, but Donovan Mitchell is the superstar on this team. Like, when you look up and down this roster, that is the best player, and there's really no question about it. But I think they've won at least four of these games where he probably has not been the best player on the floor for the Cavs. And I think that's a great thing for this team, because there will come a time where they need him to step up and be the superstar and put on that hero's cape. And he's going to be able to do that. But the fewer amount of times he needs to do that, the better off this team's going to be. When you see how good Evan Mobley's been, when you see what Darius Garland was able to do on Monday in Madison Square Garden, I don't think Darius had a game that good or that impactful all of last season. You see how consistent Jared Allen has been. There's so much to love about this Cavs team, and there's really not a reason to think this isn't sustainable either.
Okay, you know what talk somebody off the ledge means, right?
I wasn't going to lie to you.
No, sometimes you have to lie to people to talk them off the ledge.
Okay, Nick, they're not going to be Boston.
Well, okay.
Get off the ledge.
No, but this is in other guys where Will Ferrell's like,
aim for the bushes?
No, where he goes, we've started a talk down here, and we don't think you're going to do it. That's what you're basically saying to me right now. And it's so funny because in the three or four conversations I've had with folks is, the pushback has been, well, wake me up when October ends. And my rebuttal is, I think this is close to what the Cavs thing is, or what the Guardians thing is, where it is just unbridled fun. And I think they're already upsetting the apple cart in terms of expectations. So, like, while there is a, all right, what do they do in the playoffs conversation, let's not act like the difference between them being a 5 seed and the 2 seed or the 1 seed isn't gigantic when it comes to your path to whether it's the Eastern Conference Finals or the Finals.
Massive. Massive. That is, I think battling for seeding is the most important things the Cavs will do all year. Like getting in that, because I am of the assumption that the Boston Celtics are going to win the most games in basketball, maybe second behind OKC, and they're going to be the 1 seed in the East.
Mm-hmm.
And that means you really don't want to be 4 or 5. You really want to find a way into the 2-3 slot and be on the other side of the bracket, not see Boston until the conference finals, because one, it is an easier path to get there. I think the Cavs can beat any other team in the East, not named Boston, right now if you played a 7-game series.
Mm-hmm.
And two, things can go wrong. And if the Celtics have to get through 2 rounds of the playoffs before the Cavs could see them, that gives more time for something to go wrong that could tip the scales in the Cavs' advantage. So I do think that's a very important thing. I also think it's important to note, this start's been awesome. They're not going to be perfect all year. Like, they're going to go through a stretch where they lose 3 out of 5. They're going to go through a stretch where they're not hitting shots. They're going to go through a stretch where they're not playing their best basketball. And I don't think what they've done so far is them playing their best basketball. Like, I still think that they can get better because they're 5 games into an entirely new offensive system, and it looks awesome. I think when it gets to its peak, it will look better. The Cavs need to figure out a way for that peak to be in April and May. That's what they need to do.
This is what I struggle with. The Celtics have everything they need to repeat as champions. But the problem has always been, and I think this is less of a, I know this is going to happen, and more of a, let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Phil Jackson was quoted, the first one's easy to win, the second one's damn near impossible, because we becomes I. Once you fulfilled the we by winning a championship, all of a sudden, a bunch of different eyes. Now, in fairness, they didn't really lose anybody in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
But that Brown and Tatum thing, I think that's in the same way that I think we're always going to be monitoring the Garland versus Mitchell thing, which is you can like each other personally, but when it comes to on the court, there's always going to be rough edges there, and it's always going to be something you have to overcome, even if it's just, hey, we got to remind these guys are on the same team, and it's okay that you guys have overlap and we stagger them and stuff like that. So I'm not doubting the Celtics. I'm simply saying people are anointing them. We'll see.
I mean, listen, it is a long season and a lot will happen in the NBA, good and bad, between today and the start of the playoffs in the middle of April. A lot's going to happen. As far as the Celtics go, what I'll say there is, I think Boston is in a very unique situation with those two guys, because a lot of the thing that can cause friction between two star players that do like each other but might not always be the best fit on the court, I think Tatum and Brown are really good fits. The fact that they've both gotten paid helps Boston's cause. And I actually think the fact that they were both slighted this summer helps Boston's cause too, because you look at Jason Tatum, who was benched during the Team USA run. Jaylen Brown did not make Team USA and felt like he deserved it and has blamed, you know, the shoe companies for keeping him off of the Olympic team. I think those things uniquely are in Boston's favor and might alleviate some of the perceived friction that could happen.
So I think that's a fair rebuttal, by the way. But I just think it's really interesting. There are certain teams that when tough times happen, they get tougher through no fault of their own. I don't think winning the championship suddenly made Joe Mazzulla a great head coach.
No.
I think he had a great path to a title, and I think he had the easier path to an NBA title because of all the injuries along the way. It doesn't take away the title. But when we start forecasting the next run, like if the Cavs and Celtics meet up again in the playoffs, everybody seems to be talking about, well, nobody's a good matchup for the Celtics. And that, yeah, but the Celtics also, I'm trying to think of the right NFL kind of thing. There's always an internal thing that happens when there's some, it's almost like the Yankees. There's some sort of internal thing happens when the you know what hits the fan. I don't know. I like where you're at with the Olympics thing. I don't know that goes away in the same way, by the way, that I think that of Darius and Donovan. Like, at some point, you're the same guy.
Right.
At some point, like, Darius is going to want his own team. So I've always felt like even if they win the next three titles, I think there's – I don't see Brown and Tatum ending their careers together in Boston.
Right. I would bet that they don't, but I don't think that's coming this year. And with when I look at this Cavs team – I'm focused on the 2024-2025 season. Like, I'm not looking ahead to what they can be next year because I don't think this core four is going to be together forever. I don't think anyone thinks that. But what they have now, is that good enough to be a championship contending team? With what we've seen through five games, it absolutely is. Now, for me to say, you guys are bona fide championship contenders, I'm going to need a little bit of a bigger sample size than five games. I think that's another fair thing to say.
Fair. See, this is talking me off the ledge, by the way.
Okay, yeah. good. I'm glad we're
sample
here.
Sample size. Welcome. You're starting to say like keywords, buzz phrases, all that kind of stuff.
It's been five games, and the Cavs have been awesome in these five games. They're not going to be awesome in all 82 games. They are going to have a game where, for as great as it was for that team to just absolutely put it on the Lakers last night, there's going to be five or six times this year where that happens to them, where a team's just going to have their number and they're going to put it on them. And that will happen over the course of an 82-game NBA season. I need to see, before I can say this team is a real title contender, I need to see what they look like probably in January. I think that we need, and it's not to say they're
late
not going to get better.
December is also where this team specifically has had some bugaboos.
Right, and then they've played better in, and I'm interested in that too because under JB, they always peaked too soon. They always peaked in February. What's that going to look like under Kenny Atkinson? Can they peak in April and May? If they can, yeah, they can get to the level they want to be at.
216-474-0092. Are the Cavs the greatest team in history? Okay, that's not really the topic. But again, I do need talked off
no,
the ledge here.
No, that's written down here. Oh, that is written down here.
Well, I mean,
you
if it's written
that.
Down, then it is the topic. It's not.
I'm going to say no. They're not.
Well, Danny hates the Cavs. He's a Cavs reporter. Of course he does. No, we got Pete Futek coming up at 4 today of college football news. I'll ask him about firing Ryan Day since the masses want their pound of flesh. We got Danny Cannell, CBS Sports HQ college football analyst. I'll get his take on the Ryan Day shenanigans. We will get into the Browns. We're going to do a little stay or go with Danny coming up at 3 o'clock. We also have to get into the dangerous team idea for the Cleveland Browns. But as we get started with the Cavs, because I think this is something we got to explore a little more here. Are you still in wake me up for the playoffs mode despite the Cavs' hot start? More on that next on 92.3 The Fan. So a thought here. One of the things that was apparent to me, because we've gotten to a point in culture where because there are some coaches who say nothing, nothing matters when it comes to messaging with teams. Well, J.B. Bickerstaff said a lot of things last year. He actually did say things.
Yes.
But the things that he said were things that were coddling and were, hey, let's not have too many expectations. What I really love, listen, I love the offense. I do. I love a lot of the things that we've seen that basically could not have happened if J.B. Bickerstaff was here. But what I love right now is the disparity between Donovan Mitchell's messaging last year and J.B. was stark. Donovan was talking about, yeah, it's a bad loss. We got to get back to winning. We you know, we're not having winning habits. Donovan was telling the truth all the time, and JB was sugarcoating it. What I really love about Kenny Atkinson so far is every time I hear something like that from Donovan, I hear a corresponding thing from Kenny that locks in with exact the same. Like, I think that to me is what winning basketball is about.
It sounds like everybody, and it feels like just being around this team, it feels like everybody in that locker room with the coaching staff is on the same page. And I don't think that there's a better, you know, you can bring up the quotes, and I think that's very fair. I don't think there's a better example of this than the buy-in that they've had offensively. Because, and with Donovan Mitchell in particular, he is a superstar. It is very easy for somebody who is as good as he is, who has accomplished as much as he has personally accomplished as a basketball player, to sit there and say, this is my team. The offense is going to run through me. I'm going to be the guy night in and night out. I'm the all-NBA player here. I'm the face of the franchise. That's how this is going to work. That has not been what Donovan Mitchell has done. Donovan Mitchell has been more than willing to share the spotlight with the rest of those guys. And part of it is those guys have been more than able to step up into that spotlight. But if you watch the way they play offense, and this, they play offense, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, but they play offense as if they're a team that doesn't have a superstar. They play offense as if they have to do things with everybody, that they have to share the basketball, that they have to share the responsibility because they don't have somebody that's capable of picking those things up. But they do. Playing like that when you have that star power and you have several guys that are capable of leading the show on a nightly basis, that makes you really, really difficult to deal with. And I think that shows the buy-in they have between the coaching staff, the players in the locker room, just organizationally, they're all on the same page.
While we are talking about the Cavs here, a little bit of Guardians news to pass along is Jeff Passan of ESPN just tweeting out, Guardians bench coach Craig Albernaz withdrew from the Miami job. He had already done so from the Chicago job. He will remain in Cleveland for another year. So that is a good bring back for the Guardians. I'm sure you're going to hear more in Meredith Kane's 2020s as well. But it's interesting because I see a corollary already starting to build between how we treated the Guardians this year and how we treated the Cavs. And I hope to end the end result. Because for most of the season, because nobody came in with expectations for the Guardians, it was we were all good time Charlies. And somewhere in August when they started hitting, or when they stopped hitting rather, they certainly didn't start.
They did not start then.
The pressure began. And there became this undercurrent of cynicism. And you saw that when they were down the Detroit series, and then you certainly saw it in the Yankee series, where I think most people were where I was. I don't want to say most people. I would think there were two camps. There was somebody going, like me, saying, man, it sucks to lose that series. It sucks the way you lost that series. You could have been more competitive, even if in the end you didn't have the bats, or even if you didn't have the arms for it. That series could have looked a lot differently, and for whatever reason, it didn't. But I'm still really proud of this team. Right. I still really love this team. The other camp was, and it becomes insidious really, really quickly, became, well, we haven't won a ring in 76 years, and I'm sick of being fourth best instead of 10th best. I can already kind of see that with the Cavs. The two camps emerging of good time Charlies who just are really enjoying this. Because I think the response of wake me up when the playoffs are on is good. So snobbish and so elitist. And I think it's part of ring culture and how
it is.
It's just the most overbearing, tedious conversation. Like, I'm really enjoying this team. And I will, at some point very soon, start to tear apart our expectations for this team, Danny. But the reality is, like, this, if this thing goes to where it goes and they don't get to the end goal of winning the championship, I think it's going to be so much easier to say, I'm proud of those guys. This is a hell of a season, because I think they're going to do it the way that is more exciting and more palatable for fans, which is a lot of offense. And by the way, everybody kind of sharing the load that you talked about.
Right. And I do think that the expectations are where they should be for this team, which is they should be a conference finals team. And nothing we have seen in the first five games. And again, it is five games. It is October 31st. It is very early.
It sounds like you're saying it's not early. It's time to panic.
No, it's not time to panic. But we've seen nothing to refute that they should be a really great basketball team. If they don't win the title this year, that doesn't make it a failure. Just in the same way the Guardians not winning the championship this year didn't make this season a failure. But if you do reach that step, if you reach the conference finals the same way the Guardians reached the American League Championship Series, the expectations, then I think it ratcheted up for the next year. Mm-hmm. So like with the Guardians, I am somebody who was thrilled with how this postseason run went, thrilled with how this regular season went. It was a very fun year to be a Guardians fan, very fun team to watch. But also now, and especially in that sport where they don't have external restrictions on how they can spend. Their restrictions are all internal. With the Cavs, it's different because there's, you know, rules.
I know what you're saying. It's just the funny way you
punch. There's a salary cap,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like the Guardians, they should be doing everything they can to make sure they reach that next step this offseason. Where with the Cavs, if they don't get to where they want to be, okay, well, what are you going to do to make it so you do get to where you should be next summer? That is the thing that I look for. But this team, it should be one of the most fun regular seasons that we've ever had in Cleveland. You look at that second LeBron era, which I don't think anyone in this town that is a true Cavs fan would trade for anything. But those regular seasons, because of LeBron and because of what he had already accomplished both here and in Miami, very much could just be wake me up when the playoffs arrive. Mm-hmm. And you could have that elitist thing because the Cavs were all but guaranteed a spot in the finals. I think that this is going to be the most fun regular season that the Cavs have since 2008, 2009, when that team won 66 games. Where that regular season, yes, there were postseason expectations, but that team hadn't accomplished anything real yet. Yes, they went to the finals a couple years prior, but then the next year they won 45 games. This team should feel a lot like that team, where they're going to win a lot of basketball games. They're going to be incredibly fun. I don't know if they're going to win the title, but this is going to be one of the most fun regular seasons Cavs fans ever have.
Well, and I think, okay, so I don't want to say that last year, oh, they dramatically fell off their pace because they made it second round of the playoffs.
Well, and they got hurt. Like that, yeah. Regular season was, if you want to excuse a regular season where they went back on their win total from 51 to 48, I don't have an issue with what happened last regular season because Darius Garland had a nightmare of a year. Evan Mobley missed a bunch of time. Donovan Mitchell missed time at the end of the year. Like that stuff happens. It does. And if that happens again this year, then we might have some questions about why does this keep happening? But also then you excuse, okay, they didn't win 57 games like we thought they could.
So, but I do think this season is about getting back on track. And to me, getting back on track means that by the end of this year, you're not beleaguered by perceptional issues, right? Like Darius's trade value, that's a perceptional issue. Mm-hmm. Darius isn't a lesser basketball player. He had a rough year because of injuries.
Yeah.
But his trade value was killed and diminished by those perceptional issues, by the injuries. So like that, Jared Allen, like by the end of the playoffs, whether it's the second round or the third round, because I have a little more wiggle room, like the goal should be the Eastern Conference Finals. The expectation should be, let's be super competitive and get to the point where you're on the verge of that. And if you get there, because again, matchup matters.
It depends who you play.
Yes.
Like if the Cavs end up as the four seed and they play Boston in the second round and they lose to the Celtics in a more competitive series than last year. Okay. We can talk about that being a success of a run. If they lose to somebody else in anything less than seven games, I don't know that I can necessarily get on board with this being some massive success.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends. This is where the rest of the regular season matters. But I think
right.
My point
but
is,
as I look at things right now, and this is something that is going to change as the year goes on, because there's a ton of time before this actually happens. It's going to change as the year goes on. But as I look at things right now, I can't look at a team other than the Celtics and say, if the playoffs started today, I would pick that team to beat the Cavs. Mm-hmm. I would pick them to beat the Knicks. The Bucks are in shambles. The Sixers, they're just not going to be healthy when the playoffs arrive. I would pick them to beat Orlando, Indiana, you name it. I would pick the Cavs to beat them other than Boston. So as I sit here right now, I have to say, if you lose to somebody other than Boston in the playoffs, I don't know that that's a success.
But I do think there are ways which, whether it's the second round of the playoffs or the Eastern Conference Finals or the Finals, that by the end of this, people around the NBA will go, instead of, man, the Cavs, okay, there was some good from the Cavs. They beat Orlando. It was kind of wonky. Yeah, they were injured. But basically, looking at the Cavs with skepticism, and like basically you can change that, even if you lose in the playoffs, to, man, the Cavs are going to be a problem. And I think that is, and again, that goes back to how do you look. So it's so funny. Like, I think what you're saying is, and this is fair, like I think the first five games prove If you're not going to get hip on this team, if you're not going to hop on the bandwagon, or if you don't care about what happens until the playoffs, I think you're going to miss a lot of really meaningful things with this team, because I think this is just the starting point. You know, the NBA is going to react to what the Cavs are doing,
right?
And then the Cavs have enough talent to react and readjust. And I think, you know, if this is the starting point, it starts to make really interesting with, well, how far can you push this thing? Because, you know, we talked about the importance of, well, one night it's Jarrett, and one night it's Evan, and one night it's Donovan, and one night it's Darius, and some nights it's Darius early and then, you know, Jarrett late. Or, you know,
like last night, it was Donovan early. Like, and I think it was very important that Donovan came out to a great start last night, because when LeBron is in the building, it does not feel like a normal Wednesday regular season game in Cleveland, Ohio. It feels like a playoff game. And I think Donovan's fast start settled the Cavs down. And then with Evan Mobley in foul trouble, Jared Allen was the best player on the floor for large stretches of that game. That's what the Cavs needed in that moment.
But I think we're so used to, hey, LeBron, carry the ball up, make some magic, get that shot for somebody or for yourself and make the plays. I think we've forgotten. This is how it's supposed to look when you don't have LeBron. And I think that's so important. The regular season implications are you're going to be able to keep Donovan so much fresher.
Right.
And not just fresher, I'm talking about physically, which is huge. I'm talking about mentally and emotionally.
Right.
And I think it's also going to build up Darius. And I think it is going to build up Evan. And I think it is going to build up Jared. And there might be long-term things we still have to say. Well, can you carry the two bigs? Can you carry the two guards? Those to me are things that are determined by, okay, how does it go beyond this and how does everybody feel? But like when it comes to building a team that can win all together, that's what this regular season is about. And I'll be honest with you. I thought 5 games ago I was, well, I'm just going to keep it low commitment casual here.
Nope, you're all in.
And now now I'm just so excited to see, okay, what are they doing on any given night and how are they reacting? Because last night's a game that, you know, if you're getting called all the fouls on, and the Lakers have, what is it, 3 fouls going into the fourth quarter?
Yeah, it was like they were, the Cavs had committed 20 fouls, the Lakers had committed 3 with 2 minutes left in the third quarter. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Those are the games the Cavs have tripped themselves up over.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that is, it's the thing that annoyed me about JB most was complaining about calls. They didn't. They didn't let that stop. They were down at halftime to the Knicks. They didn't let that stop them. And in a game of runs, in a game of momentum, it's not that they're impervious to it, but you can tell that they have more options when the momentum is going against them or when it feels like it is. That's huge. And so in a weird way, I think for some people, they saw 5 games and they said, oh, wake me up when it comes time for the playoffs because I've made up my mind in a good way. No, I'm like, wait. These are our first 5 games? Okay, let's see where this thing can go, because if this is where you start, conceivably, you can reach your ceiling even quicker, and that doesn't mean all about Donovan. It means everybody. And if you can reach your ceiling quicker, that's how you kind of shock the NBA and upset the apple cart.
Right, and if you want to sleep through this and wait until the playoffs, Nick, you're going to miss what I think is going to be an incredibly fun regular season by this team.
I think that
this team is absolutely must-watch TV every single night in Cleveland. I do.
216-474-0092. BP, Dick, you guys stick there. We'll get to you in just a little moment here. The question is, are you still, after 5 games, because I am converted, all right? I was wake me up in the playoffs. I'm just going to enjoy the enjoying the regular season. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it so much, I'm probably locked in a lot quicker than I thought I was going to be with the Cavaliers. So I want to hear from you guys on that one. More Cavs talk and Bronny's big moment next on 92.3 The Fan. My prediction was right, though. I did predict he would get his first basket last night.
It's really cool. It was really very, very cool to see.
It's so funny because I said this yesterday, and I saw my guy, Earl DePearl, tweet this out as well today, and then I responded to his because I don't think we're talking about Bronny in the right light. We're making it all about LeBron, and we don't realize, like, there's so much about Bronny that if he just didn't have the last name James, we'd be rooting for in such a huge way. Late second round pick, trying to make the NBA. He had ridiculous health issue, life-threatening issue at USC, which ended his college career, amongst other things. And then third, like, he's a local boy done good.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he's a Northeast Ohio kid, just like his dad. He's a kid from Akron. Like, I thought it was, I thought it was so cool to see that happen. I thought the way that the crowd received him was awesome. Like 7 minutes left in the game, and the Cavs are up by 22 at that point. The "We want Bronny" chance, I thought it was really, really cool.
I thought it was fun. I saw people like analyzing it, and I was like, well, of course, it's social media. Don't base your expectations off social media. But I was like, how could you not just enjoy what that moment was instead of turning it into some cynical BS that we normally do?
Well, and like to have it happen in the building where, I don't want to say he grew up, but the building where he spent so much time as a young child, in the building where the banner that represents his dad's greatest athletic accomplishment, in my opinion, hangs from the rafters, to do it on that floor, to do it with what was essentially the same type of shot that his dad hit for his first ever NBA basket 22 years and a day before in Sacramento. I thought that was all really cool. I thought that was an awesome moment. I'm really glad that I was in the building for that. I don't know what's going to happen with Bronny in his career. I have no idea.
Yeah. Nobody does.
I think he can become a legitimate NBA role player with the proper development. I don't doubt that happening. And I know that he works really hard, and I know that he goes about things the right way. To see that on that floor in that building was really cool. I thought the way the fans handled it was awesome too.
Somebody compared him yesterday. Now, and I'm sorry, whoever you were out there on social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. They compared him like, oh, could he be Patrick Beverley? And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. Like undersized.
By
NBA standards, undersized. But point guard, backup point guard, starter on maybe a championship team with a lot of superstars, really good defensive player, and effective enough offensively. And I was like, that would be such a success.
Yeah. For the 55th pick in the draft, absolutely.
And for a kid who played like, was it 12 games at USC?
It was not many. I mean, he going through what he went through health-wise and being in cardiac arrest, 15 months ago, 14 months ago from right now, to scoring an NBA basket in 14 months is a wild journey to go on. I think we lose sight of that at sometimes because of what his name is.
Can I actually say, because I think you're in the perfect position to either dispute this or confirm this.
Oh, yes.
Because I've paid a lot of attention at how people talk about Bronny when they actually do, instead of just using Bronny as a crux to talk about LeBron. And I think it's pretty disgusting how people that I really like in this business, and I'm not going to call them out by name because it can turn into one of those Barrett Sports Media articles. And
come on, do it.
Okay, like Michelle Beadle.
Okay.
I think Michelle Beadle is so fantastic. I do. And I honestly think it's a crime that she doesn't have a bigger space in the NBA. And that's the one that I remember top of mind. But there are others, though. It seems like people are allowing their cynicism or their irritation at LeBron and all the things that come with LeBron to shade their coverage of Bronny.
I think you have to be a tremendous hater to think that's not cool. And I've seen it all day today in my mentions. So I tweeted out a photo last night. The net from the basket Bronny made the jumper on was taken off. It was given to a member of the Lakers support staff. And I saw Bronny James walking to the press conference room with a plastic bag that had his jersey and the net in it. So like the Cavs gave him the net to take home and that he scored his first basket on. Like, I think that's a really, really cool gesture. I don't know that any other franchise would have done that. I don't know that it would have made sense for other franchises to do that. But because of the history he and his family have in Cleveland with this franchise, it makes a ton of sense. I thought it was awesome the Cavs did it. And my mentions have just been filled with how awful it is, how much nepotism there is, all that stuff. I'm like, just enjoy this. Like, you are such a hater if you don't think this is cool. I don't know what Bronny's going to be. Nobody does. He's going to go to the G League very soon and start to develop into hopefully a better basketball player. But just appreciate these moments because we've never seen this before and it's so cool.
I also just think it's weird the things we symbol, like the people we use as symbols of nepotism and the people we don't. And how we silo it into this is a LeBron problem instead of a worldly problem. But big picture, do you agree with me? Because I've yet to hear somebody talk about Bronny without bringing up the LeBron part, without talking about Bronny in and of himself with some level of sneer.
Yeah, this is all about LeBron. And it's unfortunate because the other cool thing about this, the guy is good enough to be in the NBA when his child is old enough to be in the NBA. Yeah. Like, we've never seen that before either. And that is insane.
That's so good. The idea that that's lost on people is wild to me.
Right. Like, this guy is turning 40 years old in 2 months. He is in his 22nd year in the league. And he is old enough and still good enough that his kid is in the league and this can happen. That is incredible. And to hate on that, like, it's such a loser take. It is.
I just think it's more like I think
it's all about LeBron, and I think it's totally unfair to Bronny.
Well, but I think at some point there's going to be a time after LeBron retires where we look back in the era that he grew up at as an athlete, and where we start to understand the need for control that LeBron has on every level, whether it's his image, whether it's teams, whether it's whatever. But I think we're going to look back on LeBron and in to some extent Bronny with a lot of compassion, because he, like, Michael grew up, quote unquote, and won titles and all this in the cable TV era. And that was, to that point, the most attention and the most spotlight we'd ever given to an athlete before.
Right.
And there are guys who bridged both of those, right? Started in cable and then went to, like Kobe, then went to the digital age. Mm-hmm. But, like, in the social media age, LeBron's first year was 2003. Right. When was Facebook created? And so this guy has lived his whole career in an era that has fostered haters, trolls, and bees, and it is extended to his kid. And I do think there's going to be some point where there's a reckoning for even people who don't like him, because I've had it with Tom Brady. I had it with Kobe. Mm-hmm. So I was one of those guys that hated their greatness.
Sure.
Where you go, maybe I graded too hard because I was so close to it, and closer to that than the way that I was with Michael, or closer to that than the way I was with Magic or Bird or somebody like that.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone that shouldn't like Bronny. I think that there are people that don't like Bronny because of who his dad is, and there's no other reason for it, and it's unfortunate.
216-474-0092. As we talk about Bronny, we'll just start with a very easy topic here. Did you enjoy what you saw last night? Were you one of the cheering hordes of people asking?
It was loud in there, man.
It was very loud.
I don't know what it sounded like over the television. In person, it was loud there. And the pop of that crowd when he got up off the bench was awesome.
But we've got to use Greg Newsom to get into Stay or Go with the Browns at the deadline next on 92.3 The Fan.